Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. It's nice to have you with us today to talk about the issues that make a difference in our lives. Certainly, when it comes to the area of aging, we have a lot of interested parties because between the baby boomers and senior citizens, we represent the largest single group in the United States, over one half the American population. So we're going to deal with the weak links in our anatomy and the anti-aging concepts. That's in the second part. First, however, we're going to look at individualized nutrition for optimal brain health. My guest is Dr. Joseph DeBay, D-E-B-E. He is a board-certified nutritionist, chiropractor, expert in sports injuries, and practices North Shore Fitness in Great Neck, New York, and is the author of The Ultimate Creatine Handbook, Safe and Alternative for Muscle Building. And also, he believes that we could be stress-proofing our brain, enhancing our memory, if we only knew how to do it. So we're going to ask him that. And we're going to go to him now. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary. Nice to be here.
Joseph, when we look around us today, one of the things I hear about all the time is brain fatigue. People's brains ache, they're tired, they're in a fog, they don't have the same cognition. Our society is suffering from an epidemic of mental, emotional challenges, not necessarily disorders, and not always the neurodegenerative diseases that we've been told. If trends continue, however, Alzheimer's disease does threaten to substantially undermine our healthcare system. In fact, on my KPFK program this morning I talked about an article that appeared in the Financial Times that showed that the aging populations in Japan and Germany and France and England and Italy are so great, and the diseases they're suffering so extensive, and their health community virtually powerless to do anything about it, that they could virtually bankrupt their economies. Now, that's also true here in the United States, in the sense that we have $1.6 trillion being spent on disease. Of that $1.6 trillion, and it'll be at $2 trillion in just 3 years, over $1 trillion is spent on baby boomers and senior citizens who have illnesses. The vast majority of these, of course, are preventable. But based upon the current medical model, no one's doing anything to really make a measurable impact upon prevention. It's only isolated efforts. And then there's no national health policy. A study will show that taking coenzyme Q10 at high doses will help people with Parkinson's, but you don't see any national program to get people to take coenzyme Q10. To the contrary, it's just the opposite. In fact, I'm going to deal with this in great depth on the program that follows this one on a different station, where I'm going to take on how we finally, I believe, figured out who's been behind the attacks on herbs and vitamins and why it's been such a systematic campaign, and the people in the media have not figured out they've been used by the people behind the scenes trying to make us disbelieve in the use of nutrition and vitamins, attacking them nonstop. In fact, the more we find that nutrients play a role in the prevention or treatment of disease, the greater the attack against it. It doesn't make sense. Well, how can you formulate a national healthcare program to get everyone doing better things if every time a study comes out showing that when we do something like eat fruits and vegetables and take certain nutrients that we get better, lessen our likelihood of major illnesses? Shortly thereafter, there's an attack saying, oh, you don't need to do any of this. It's all nonsense. So we don't yet have a policy where people could learn, here's what eating right is really about, and here's how we can change these advents of stroke and heart attacks and arthritis and everything else that involves aging. So what we have to do is take a look at our own healthcare system, something we have not done. And even when people who are well-intentioned, even though politically motivated, like currently Al Gore's got the idea, and I'm assuming from an honest intention, to want to get more Americans covered by insurance. That's looking at the wrong end of the problem. That starts with an assumption that there's nothing you can do to prevent these diseases that is such a burden against our economy. And of course, who pays for this? We pay for it, including all the people making honest efforts to be healthy. Interestingly enough, for our efforts of being healthy, we're not rewarded with any, let's say, subsidies. But the more you go out of your way to be sick and do stupid things, the more we subsidize you. So we continue to enable a nation to pay no attention to prevention, to pay for the damage done from the mistakes they wittingly or unwittingly make, do not reward people who've made good choices and not caused the system a burden. So everything is upside down. There's no reality anywhere in this system. And then we look to Congress, and what we do not see is the hand of the pharmaceutical industry behind the scenes. And it doesn't matter whether you're liberal or conservative, or even some of the other Green Party, which we assume are pristine, pure, and not true. There's influences everywhere, because some group always want to make sure that their agenda gets up there. Here's the latest on Congress. Of the 535 members of the U.S. Congress, these are the people who contribute to our laws. The latest has shown 29 have been accused of spousal abuse, 7 have been arrested for fraud, 19 have been accused of writing bad checks, 117 have directly or indirectly bankrupted at least 2 businesses, 3 have been done time in jail for assault, 71 cannot get a credit card due to bad credit, 14 have been arrested on drug-related charges, 8 have been arrested for shoplifting, 21 are currently defendants in lawsuits, 84 have been arrested for drunk driving. Now, what does that tell you about the moral fiber of people who are supposed to be in a position to hold a higher ground on such issues, not to be obtainable by special interest, and yet they're rife with special interest? So when we ask, why don't we know more about nutrients that could impact the brain and foods that could help prevent colorectal cancer and breast cancer and nutrients that could help prevent macular degeneration that end up causing us to spend money that we do not have for conditions that could be prevented? Well, Mark Twain said it best. He said, make money and the whole world will conspire to call you a gentleman. And take a look at the people in positions of power and how we suddenly look at their money, look at their prestige, look at their success, and give them that gentlemanly insignia that they hardly deserve. It was Horace Greeley who said the darkest hour of any man's life is when he sits down to plan how to get money without earning it. How about being a lawyer? That's one good way. Or a legislator is certainly second best. That said, let's go to the issue. The issue is this. Review the variety of symptoms of altered brain function, which are influenced by lifestyle, our environment, and nutrition, just to show that when people have been given these diagnoses, they're frequently wrong diagnosis. And with a wrong diagnosis, you're automatically guaranteed the wrong treatment.
Okay, Gary. The list of symptoms that can be influenced by nutrition to some degree, often to a great degree, is really tremendous. Impaired thinking ability, impaired concentration, poor memory, confusion, depression, anxiety, anger, irritability, panic attacks, learning disabilities, aggressive and violent behavior, bipolar disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, schizophrenia, autism, addictions of various types, self-injury, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and other disorders, symptoms like insomnia and headaches, hunger, sugar cravings, overeating, and obesity, anorexia and bulimia, fatigue, seizures, altered libido or sex drive, chronic pain, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome. And due to the influence of the brain chemicals, the neurotransmitters, on the release of hormones from the pituitary gland, we have a wide range of other symptoms and conditions that can result. The hormones released from the pituitary gland, including growth hormone, thyroid-stimulating hormone, ACTH, which stimulates the adrenal stress glands, LH and FH, which stimulate the testicles and ovaries. All these hormones are influenced by altered brain function. And the consequences of that are huge. The effect that altered brain function has on food cravings and the resultant alteration in carbohydrate metabolism and stress hormone output leads to further ill health effects. And then, of course, nutrition influences the neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases.
All right. Now, so at least people understand what you just said. Just the fact of malnutrition, undernutrition, wrong kind of environment, impact of toxic metals on our body, all those symptoms could manifest what many behavioralists, psychologists, psychiatrists, your physician may inadvertently assume are some form of organic brain disorder and label you with an inappropriate mental diagnosis and treat you with a variety of tranquilizers or antipsychotic medication or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, none of which are going to do you any good, all of which have serious side effects, and all of which are going to have some substantial toxic reactions in the body. So contrast for us the conventional medicine and nutritional approaches to brain health and tell us what you feel is superior about either.
Okay, the conventional approach to brain health is typical of the conventional medical approach in general. It seems to have been derived from the success of antibiotic treatments. When antibiotics were invented, they were blockbuster drugs. They were amazing remedies. We had a single cause for a set of symptoms. The cause was a bacterial infection. And there was a single remedy, a single chemical that got rid of the illness. And this same logic has been applied to chronic complex conditions, but it hasn't worked because the chronic conditions involve multi-genes and they involve multiple lifestyle and environmental factors, and a single agent just doesn't work. The approach of conventional medicine is to match the patient's signs and symptoms with a name, a diagnosis, and then the diagnosis is matched against a remedy, a single synthetic chemical. It's a very reductionistic approach. The chemicals that are used overpower the body's physiology by poisoning enzyme systems, blocking or stimulating receptors, and they, not surprisingly, they produce some very major side effects. This approach fails to address the underlying cause. If we talk about some of the side effects, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which work by increasing levels of serotonin in the synapse, the space between the nerve cells, and serotonin is the calming, feel-good neurotransmitter that helps relieve depression. And actually, 1 out of 10 Americans are on some type of SSRI. Some of the common side effects of these drugs are indifference, sexual dysfunction, other symptoms. A more probably serious side effect involves alteration of other aspects of physiology. About 6% of Caucasians have a weakness in a particular detoxification enzyme that's called cytochrome P450-2D6. The important thing is that this is a major detoxification enzyme that helps the body to eliminate a wide variety of toxins. And for these people that have a genetic weakness in that enzyme, they have a 240% increased risk for Parkinson's disease. The SSRIs, Prozac, Paxil, and Zoloft, shut down that detoxification enzyme. So it's likely that people on these medications will wind up coming down with Parkinson's at an increased rate. the conventional medical approach is based on an artificial construct of how the body works. All of medicine's approach to chronic and degenerative conditions is based on a faulty foundation. You name the disease, you give the remedy. It's really a flat earth theory of physiology. But it's really something from the dark ages when you know how the body actually does work. With regards to brain health, neurotransmitters are approached as if they functioned in a vacuum, but nothing could be further from the truth. All of the body's organs and systems are interconnected in a complex web-like fashion, and their function influences each other's. Now, nutrition can be practiced in different forms. One approach is symptom suppression, much like the medications. This approach is safer than using medications, but it still doesn't address the underlying cause. What I'm talking about, for example, is using St. John's wort for depression. It's a better choice than the medications, but it still doesn't address why the person is actually depressed as far as foundational causes. Now, if we take a look at a symptom cluster that a female patient of mine came in with, I think I'll be able to illustrate this point. She came in with depression and mood swings, and she was put on Prozac. She had hair loss. She was given Rogaine. She had acne. She was given antibiotics. Weight gain. She was put on Synthroid. High cholesterol. She was given Lipitor. Hypertension. She was given Lopressor. Premenstrual syndrome, Valium. And for infertility, she underwent in vitro fertilization. Now, if we wanted to use a symptom-suppressing natural approach, we could give her St. John's wort for the depression and mood swings. We could give her biotin for the hair loss, zinc for the acne, ephedra for the weight gain, niacin for the high cholesterol, magnesium for the hypertension, primrose oil for the premenstrual syndrome, and chasteberry for the infertility. What was actually going on with this patient, however, was that after a thorough evaluation, I determined that she had metabolic syndrome, which is a term that refers to altered metabolism, largely involving carbohydrate metabolism, the function of the hormone insulin in the body, and alteration in stress hormone levels. And these imbalances cause a cascade of imbalances in other hormones throughout the body and produce all of these symptoms. And once we got her on a good lifestyle program of diet, exercise, targeted nutritional supplements, stress reduction, all of her symptoms gradually started to recede. So what I advocate is not symptom-suppressing nutritional therapy, but actually looking for the causes of altered physiology and correcting them. And this approach is often referred to as functional medicine, as opposed to pathology-based medicine that just looks to name a disease. The functional medicine approach to brain health is systematic. We develop a detailed understanding of the patient's signs and symptoms. Next, we do special laboratory testing to uncover the metabolic imbalances. Then we search for the factors that have resulted in these metabolic imbalances. And in broad terms, the factors are diet, exercise, toxicity, chronic infections, stress, and on the subject of toxins, medications also are toxins. Medications produce altered metabolism and contribute to health problems. Then from all this information, we can develop a personalized treatment program for the individual. Two people with the same symptoms or conditions can have very different factors leading to those conditions, and so they need personalized treatment. We can't just use cookbook medicine, whether it's medication or herbal. And we also need to recognize that the brain does not function in a vacuum. Altered metabolism cuts across organ systems and disease classifications. The brain is strongly influenced by other organs and functions in the body. We have to have a good circulatory system in order for the brain to be healthy. The hormones coming from the endocrine system, the thyroid gland, the adrenal or stress glands, the sex hormones, the blood sugar regulating hormones from the pancreas all impact brain health. We have to have optimal digestion and absorption. If we don't, obviously, the brain is not going to have the fuel it needs. The brain, like the rest of the body, is made up of the nutrients that we consume.
Okay, what I want you to do is hold your thoughts. We're going to take a station ID break. Come back and continue on this journey of understanding brain health. I'm Gary Nall. You're listening to Non-Commercial Radio. We'll be back in just a moment. For those senior citizens in the audience, today is the last day to call to sign up for the new 6-month, once a week, anti-aging program. This is only for 60-year-olds and up, and it's going to be once a week. And it's going to be a new study that we're doing with some new protocols that I think can really make a difference in people's lives. But we are limited in space. I think we have about 7 or 8 seats left. So call 646-505-4660. That's 646-505-4660. And that class starts tomorrow evening, 5 o'clock. So for 60-year-olds up, senior citizens, a special health, nutrition, wellness program for you. Welcome back, everyone. Dr. Joseph Debe is my guest. We're talking about brain health. And he was explaining why you have to be aware of what's going on in your body. Let's talk about the value of various laboratory tests for brain health, which ones and why. And also, I don't want to leave out the impact of refined carbohydrates on our brain function, including looking at the carbohydrate challenge test that could lead to improved treatment for hypoglycemia, which itself was not recognized for a long time, and only now is being understood that if you have a low blood sugar, you can manifest a psychotic behavior, paranoid, delusional, depressed behavior, panic attacks. And when you correct the blood sugar to make it more normal, then you don't have that phenomena. But that still hasn't caught on in psychology or psychiatry. I remember a friend of mine who was a professor at Columbia University in psychology coming down to a retreat I did. This was at the Grossinger's Hotel, which for those who live in the East Coast, it's a Borscht Belt hotel up in the Catskills. And we would take over a hotel for a weekend. It was a lot of fun, great food. And I even hired Jackie Mason as my comedian. And that weekend, couldn't afford him today, but back then he was not on Broadway. And Dick Shawn, and it was all great gourmet vegetarian cuisine, and brought speakers in like Linus Pauling. Well, my friend came for a weekend. And during one of the discussions, it was Dr. Abram Hoffer talking about the role of nutrient imbalances created by sugar in the diet. And Hoffer was talking about some people who had been diagnosed with schizophrenia and would have lived their whole lives in that kind of black hole, either institutionalized or on medication. And when they did a glucose tolerance test, a series of tests to determine the blood sugar, they found out all these people in this particular study group, none had been given a nutritional evaluation, a heavy metal evaluation. The symptoms alone were all that was necessary in how they were acting. And when they corrected a group of their blood sugars, their behavior normalized. And it was a message. So this person came home wondering, well, is this true? So the psychologist took 20 patients and gave a complete nutritional profile because I was invited in to do the actual nutritional profiling. And I sat for an hour, hour and a half with each person in the psychologist's presence and went through all the questions that the person didn't know to ask. And without exception, these people had really terrible diets. Not that they were all overweight. They weren't. The ones who tend to be depressed were, but there was several who were actually thin, who were extremely anxious. But when a blood profile came back and a heavy metal analysis came back and glucose tolerance, they were off the charts. So over a period of 6 months, there was an effort to get the heavy metals out of the body, clean up their diet, detoxify them, and 85%, according to psychologists, reverted to normal behavior and no longer required counseling. And this made a believer out of this particular person. Interestingly enough, this person also authored papers, but was not able to convince any of their colleagues of this approach. In fact, I was at a dinner with some 16 or 17 other psychologists discussing this, and not one of them accepted the legitimacy in this. But of course, they weren't willing to try it on their own patients. So at least, but for one psychologist, they realized, and they even told me, now anytime they counsel someone, as a part of their counseling, they make sure they do a nutritional profile and get the right kind of test, because it does make a difference. So please give us your insights into brain chemistry testing and other tests that can help a person understand how the environment or their food or nutrients could be making a difference.
Okay, Gary, my pleasure. The test I turn to the most is called an ION profile. ION stands for Individualized Optimal Nutrition, and it's a test that actually consists of seven different evaluations from blood and urine. There's amino acid analysis, fatty acid analysis, vitamins, lipid peroxides, which are a marker of free radical damage in the body. We get a homocysteine level, which is a toxic amino acid I'll speak about in a minute, red blood cell mineral levels, and toxic metals. And lastly, urine organic acid analysis, which gives us insight into the body's metabolism. It's important for people to understand that what goes on in the brain, neurotransmission, is a form of communication. First, the message is composed in a nerve cell. Then it is sent. Then the message is received and read by another nerve cell. And all this needs to be occurring optimally for proper brain health. For example, to produce the neurotransmitter dopamine, which is altered in attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, we need the amino acid tyrosine, and we need vitamins B2, B6, folic acid, magnesium, iron, and cysteine in order to compose the message. And then it has to be sent through the synapse and bind to receptors on other nerve cells, and that requires proper nutrients be in the cell membrane of the nerve cell that's receiving the message. And there are other things that come into play here. Lead, for example, can stop the message from being sent. Lead can impair the release of neurotransmitters from the nerve cell. And for the message to be received and read, we not only need proper nutrition, but we also need proper pH. The cells have to be healthy in general. And all of this requires metabolic energy. The amino acid analysis is a great test in itself. The amino acids, there are 20 that are measured with this test, and the amino acids that have a direct bearing on brain health are neurotransmitters and neurotransmitter precursors. Then there are other amino acids that play roles in different ways. Methionine, for example, is critical for methylation, which is a process, a chemical process, whereby a methyl group, which is a carbon with three hydrogens, is transferred from one compound to another. The important thing to understand here is that that's a critical process to activate certain neurotransmitters, and it's also a critical process to produce the lipids that surround the nerve cells. So without enough methionine, we don't have adequate methylation, and brain health suffers. What can deplete methionine? Well, we might have a poor quality diet. If we're eating a diet that's low in protein, we can be lacking in all the amino acids. Methionine plays other roles in the body. It's critical for detoxification. So if we have a toxic load and methionine is being used up in the process of detoxification, then we don't have enough methionine to perform those other functions I just described. And that's a common theme that occurs over and over again with these nutrients. Nutrients can be used in the work of detoxification or to produce healthy brains. And if we have a major toxic burden, then our brains suffer because of it. One other thing I like to mention about methionine, it's involved in a metabolic detoxification pathway called sulfation, which is impaired in cases of Parkinson's disease. If we look at other amino acids that we measure with this test, phenylalanine and tyrosine are converted on into the neurotransmitters dopamine, epinephrine, and norepinephrine. Tryptophan is converted into serotonin. Another reason why someone can be low in tryptophan, besides not eating enough protein, is stress. Stress will cause the body to convert tryptophan into other compounds in the body other than serotonin. Less will be available to be converted into serotonin. The test also gives us levels of neurotransmitter amino acids such as glutamine, aspartic acid, and taurine. Taurine has multiple functions in the body. And if it's being used up in battling inflammation, there's less available to keep balance of electrolytes inside and outside the cells, and seizures can be the result. I currently have a patient who has seizures that seem to be related, after we've done some evaluation, to an overgrowth of unfriendly bacteria in the intestinal tract, bacteria and yeast, and they produce a metabolic waste product that causes the body to not be able to reabsorb taurine from the kidneys. So the taurine is just wasted in the urine. So even though she's supplementing with taurine, so far her taurine levels are deficient. So what we need to do is to deal with the underlying intestinal infection. Other reasons why people can have low levels of amino acids besides inadequate protein in the diet are maldigestion and malabsorption, which are very common conditions. And then we also have iatrogenic-induced conditions. Iatrogenic refers to conditions that are caused by therapy, by medicine. When people are taking acid-blocking medications because of gastritis, heartburn, they don't have the ability to absorb amino acids. And I see this over and over again. People have low amino acid status because of acid-blocking medication. Then their brains will suffer for it. Another thing that's measured with this test is homocysteine. Homocysteine is a toxic amino acid, and when it's elevated, it's associated with poor memory and poor learning, concentration, increased risk to Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease, and it's lowered by B vitamins, folic acid and B12 and B6 and other nutrients. If our homocysteine is elevated, we won't be able to produce optimal levels of dopamine and norepinephrine and serotonin, and we won't be able to form the brain lipids that are critical for nerve transmission. When homocysteine is elevated, it's most often because of inadequate folic acid, and supplementing folic acid was found in one study to be as effective as tricyclic antidepressants in reducing depression. And reduced folic acid and B12 levels have been associated with dementia in general. Next part of this test is the red blood cell mineral and heavy metal analysis. We get levels of about 10 different minerals. Chromium, magnesium, and vanadium are related to blood sugar regulation. Copper is involved in formation of several neurotransmitters, as is magnesium. Low levels of magnesium are associated with ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, with depression, anxiety, and irritability. And we have levels of zinc, and low zinc is associated with reduced norepinephrine, which can result in anxiety, depression, fatigue. Then we get a measure of toxic metals, aluminum, cadmium, lead, and mercury. And if we have a toxic burden, we have increased likelihood of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, violent behavior, irritability, learning disabilities, depression, impaired memory. Where do these things come from? Lead comes from water, from art supplies, from some contaminated nutritional supplements, and apparently even just busy roadways. The lead weights on cars disintegrate over time and put lead dust out into the air. 1 in 6 American children under 6 years of age is suffering from lead intoxication. Mercury can come from seafood and from amalgam of fillings in the teeth, and even from vaccines. Vaccines have a compound called thimerosal, which is which contains mercury. So every time a child gets a vaccination, he or she is getting a dose of mercury. The effect of these toxins on the body are influenced by our nutrient status. If we have low levels of the nutrients required to remove these toxins from our system, then we suffer more for it. Some of the nutrients that are important are the sulfur-containing amino acids, like methionine, which is measured with this test. Then there are other factors. If we have high levels of stress hormones, that impairs the function of the detoxification enzymes. The Journal of Clinical Chemistry published an article and stated that the symptoms of chronic poisoning are fatigue, sleep disturbances, allergy symptoms, confusion, gastrointestinal distress, anxiety, and headaches. The next part of this test is a measure of lipid peroxides, which are damaged fats in the body. The brain is, if we exclude water, the brain is mostly fat. And lipid peroxides are fats that have been damaged by free radicals, which are those highly reactive molecules formed as part of normal metabolism. We can't get away from them, but we have to try and keep them in check with antioxidants. And this test will show us if we're doing that or not. Free radicals cause physical damage to the body, and they also alter its function. The test gives us levels of some of the important antioxidants, coenzyme Q10, vitamin E, vitamin A, and beta carotene. We can see which ones we need to supplement in particular. This test also measures levels of the fatty acids, and the fatty acids are critical to brain health. Normally, 18 to 24% of the dry weight of the brain is composed of DHA, docosahexaenoic acid, which comes in the diet from cold water fish. We can also get it preformed in algae supplements of algae or algae oil. And it's critical for how the cells function. It's very important for neurotransmitter release and also for cells to receive the proper message from the neurotransmitters. And most Americans don't eat a diet that supplies adequate levels of DHA. If a child isn't breastfed, there's usually no DHA. Up until this year, there was no DHA in infant formulas. We have to be very careful to make sure that we're getting adequate levels, and this test will show us if we are or not. Low levels have been found in ADHD children, and supplementing with these omega-3 fatty acids have relieved depression, bipolar disorder, reduced aggression under times of stress. Some of the other fatty acids I like to highlight, gamma-linolenic acid was found in a study when supplemented to reduce stress. Arachidonic acid is important for reducing symptoms of ADHD. But on the other hand, if we have too much of it,
it's a problem,
which a lot of Americans do, we have increased tendency towards inflammation. And the brain is very susceptible to inflammation. Alzheimer's disease is largely inflammatory in nature. It's interesting to know that the brain contains immune system cells, and what goes on in the rest of the body to challenge the immune system, whether it's a food antigen, a food allergy, or a toxin, or an infection of some type, can be transmitted through the white blood cells circulating in the bloodstream to the brain, activate the white blood cells in the brain, and they produce free radicals and cause inflammation and damage to nerve cells, damage and death to nerve cells. The last part of the individualized optimal nutrition profile is the organic acid analysis. And organic acids are compounds that are produced in the course of metabolism. And if they show up at higher low level in the urine, there's a meaning attached to it. And the organic acids are grouped on this test according to the information they reflect. So we get insight into fatty acid metabolism and energy production. We actually see the chemicals that are produced as food and oxygen are combined in the mitochondria of the cells to produce energy. And we see if there are any blocks in the way that the cells produce energy. If we have higher low levels, then we can determine which nutrients are going to be important to help drive cellular energy. If the cells aren't producing energy the way they should, nothing is going to function the way that it should. We won't have adequate production of neurotransmitters. And when cells are lacking in energy, they become weakened. One of the nutrients that's important for energy production is creatine. And animal studies have found that creatine helps to reduce symptoms of Parkinson's and reduce the beta amyloid formation that occurs in Alzheimer's disease and helps to protect animals from death after traumatic brain injury. Creatine increases energy production and it strengthens the cell and increases its ability to withstand a toxic or traumatic insult. And in human studies, creatine has been found to reduce mental fatigue. This test also gives us information about need for specific B vitamins. We actually get a measurement of neurotransmitter metabolites. We see if there are low or high levels of different neurotransmitters related to epinephrine, norepinephrine, dopamine, and serotonin. We get information about the body's exposure to various toxins, including xylene, and its ability to detoxify. And we get information about the presence of unfriendly organisms within the intestinal tract, which is a major challenge to health. Over half of the body's immune system is clustered around the intestinal tract, and if we have elevated levels of unfriendly organisms, the immune system becomes activated. And as I mentioned before, that has a direct impact on the brain.
Joseph, we're just about out of time here. Do you want to just give us the last thing?
I guess my concluding thought would be people should take control of their health and not settle for symptom-suppressing medication or herbs, for that matter. Get to the underlying cause of their problem and do all they can to remain healthy.
Well, we appreciate you coming on and sharing this. Do you have a website?
Yes, I do, Gary. drdebe.com.
drdebe.com?
Yes.
drdebe.com. Dr. Joseph Debay, thank you very much for being on.
Thank you, Gary.